Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
This is Los Laureles Canyon, a part of the Tijuana River watershed that starts high in Mexico, crosses the international border, and ends at the wetlands of Imperial Beach in the southwestern tip of the United States. A canyon spanning two nations. Some 65,000 people live on the Mexican side, drawn here by the potential for jobs in the maquiladoras of Tijuana and the proximity to San Diego, just a few miles away. But with steep slopes, haphazard planning, and the lack of basic infrastructure, these canyon communities are not sustainable. Ramshackle homes line unpaved roads, and with no sewer system in place, polluted streams of wastewater run openly through the neighborhoods, all the way to the Tijuana estuary in California. The range of environmental challenges has inspired top academics from both sides of the border to collaborate on potential solutions. Their focus of study is here in Colonia San Bernardo, a working-class community at the top of Los Laureles Canyon. Among those organizing these efforts, Keith Pizzoli of UC San Diego.
So we have faculty and researchers on board that are coming together to try to apply our intellectual energy, our research capacity, to share perspectives with one another so that we can take an integrated approach to working with our partners here in Mexico in resolving, for lack of a better term, the wicked problems that are emerging here, the kind of ecological catastrophe in the making.
That catastrophe is twofold. First, the public health of the residents here.
There are hazards that I see. There's water that potentially is contaminated or would have greater chances of contamination.
Helene Margolis is an environmental epidemiologist.
The cliffs are unstable potentially, and you can see where there's already erosion. And I saw a number of dead animals along the side there. And those pose direct hazards, especially because children are running up and down. The kids' dogs are running up and down. So there's potential exposures.
And the other, the destruction of the Tijuana estuary, the sanctuary for wildlife at the base of Los Laureles Canyon.
If you see a map of California, you'll notice that 95% of the wetlands of California have disappeared. So this is a small area remaining almost intact from all of the wetlands that disappeared.
Oscar Romo runs the estuary's coastal training program.
It represents a great value for marine fisheries, for cleanup of water that comes from the upper reaches of the watershed. It's also a place where it's called the Pacific Flyway. The Pacific Flyway is a migratory route. Birds coming from all the way from South America stop here to refuel, to reproduce, to court, to rest. And the estuary is the only place where they can find food, nowhere else. Geographically, this is the lowest land on the watershed. Mexico happens to be on the higher ground. So naturally, water and whatever the water carries comes rushing down into this estuary. Along with that sediment, there's debris produced by urban development. Is trash produced by humans. It's also wastewater flows. It's runoff. So it's a huge threat.
When I think of the Laureles Canyon, naturally I think about the problems that we experience with cross-border flows of sewage and contamination.
Haram Sarabia is an environmental scientist who studies toxicants in the soil.
Laureles Canyon has been a perfect example of some of the larger problems that we're dealing with worldwide. What we're seeing in the world is that we are now primarily an urban population. The urban centers that are growing the most rapidly are urban centers that look a lot like the city of Tijuana. And by understanding what's happening in Tijuana, by understanding what's happening in the Laureles Canyon, then we can potentially begin to understand the problems that are affecting the world at a much larger scale, but then also the solutions that come out of places like the Laureles Canyon could also have application in many other places across the world.
Offering Los Laureles Canyon as a microcosm for global urban challenges, Pozzoli and Romo gathered a binational, cross-disciplinary group of academics, community-based partners, and college students to share their expertise on common issues in what Pozzoli refers to as the scholarship of engagement.
It is a hands-on, learn-by-doing approach to research, education, and writing, where the idea is to get students together with faculty out into the field, out of the classroom, engaged in problem solving and applying knowledge that's generated in this research process to action.
After a day of briefing one another, this group paid a visit to Colonia San Bernardo. On the bus were experts in public health, environmental health science, climate change, and urban planning.
This is the canyon that we're going to be visiting, and if you look to the right, the kind of development that's taking place in the hillside with the erosion, the sediment that runs off the landscape here is choking the Tijuana estuary.
What we've got going on here that makes it particularly challenging.
Michael Hibbard is a planner specializing in sustainable development and the management of watersheds.
First world and the third world butt up against one another. And so we have on one side this very poor society, on the other side this very rich society, and it's on the poor side of the U.S.-Mexican border that the problem is being created, but it feels like on the wealthy side of the border the consequences are being felt, but those consequences are environmental consequences that a very poor person may not fully appreciate or care about. If you're struggling to figure out how to make a living on a day-to-day basis, the issue of, siltation in an estuary isn't your priority.
Really, when you look at what's here, this is not miserable poverty, but these are people that are really trying hard to build a house, get themselves situated, and there's some things you can't do for yourself. It's very hard to build a personal sewer system.
Laura Huntoon is right. For many here, it's a daily struggle just to provide the basics for their families. They came to Colonia San Bernardo willingly after the Mexican government offered incentives to build homes in the canyon. These new residents had no way of knowing at the time of the health risks that lay in wait.
It's another hot summer day in Colonia San Bernardo. 67-year-old Carmen Garcia Cruz bathes her 5-year-old grandson, Jesus Alberto, scrubbing hard to remove the dust out of his hair and off his skin. Bath time with her grandchildren is a labor of love for the grandma of nine, but a task that she handles with care because there's no running water inside their home.
A veces diario y a veces cada tercer día por la sencilla razón de que por el agua que uno paga diario, ¿verdad?
With 9 children and 6 adults living in these conjoined modest quarters, the cost of water for this family averages about $15 a week. Aside from taking baths, there are other domestic chores which also use lots of water, like doing laundry and washing the dishes.
Nosotros de amas de casa, sencillamente yo que soy la que llevo aquí, yo para lavar mis trastes, pongo agua en un bote, voy a la llave y lo lleno, lo echo en un bote. En otro bote o alguna tinita, echo otra poca. Entonces en el bote aquí lavo los trastes, acá los enjuago, que ya se ensució el agua, ya se ve muy, muy sucia, con que estoy lavando la voy a tirar. Salgo a la calle, la aviento a la calle a tirar donde hay tierra.
Doña Carmen knows that dumping dirty, soapy water probably isn't very good for the environment, but says with no sewer system in place, it's her only choice. The dirty water makes its way down the slope, joining the stream of raw sewage that often spills into the canyon. The Rio is known to the residents as Las Aguas Negras, or the Black Waters. The adults here warn the children to stay away from the contaminated water, but they don't listen.
Sí entienden, les decimos, nada más que como los niños son traviesitos, pues se les hace fácil, porque todos les decimos nosotros, no agarren el agua porque está sucia, está cochina, se van a enfermar, les va a salir roña o se enferman de varias cosas.
Stray dogs and cats drink from the dirty water, and then children often play with the animals, causing more concern for the parents.
Por su salud, sí, pues sí tengo miedo, porque más que nada cuando así que mucha tierra pues, le pega mucho salpullido, pues más que nada por la contaminación también. Y se me enferma, se le irritan mucho los ojos a él desde chiquito y llora más.
So why put up with so many inconveniences and take the health risk? According to Doña Carmen, it's all about family reunification.
Yo primero vinieron mis hijos, se vinieron a trabajar. Una hija y luego un hijo y luego ellos pues, se fueron trayendo los demás.
So Carmen and her husband Alejandro left their home state of Michoacán, eventually settling with their family in Colonia San Bernardo. Three adults in the family work at the nearby maquiladora, earning the equivalent of just under $300 a week to support a family of 15. Their wages are barely enough to put food on the table and to be sure there's enough water for everyone, especially in the summer.
Toda la gente está comprando diario. Nada más los que tienen allí, pues ahora sí los barriles grandes donde nosotros vamos a comprar.
About the only service that comes free is trash pickup, according to Doña Carmen. But the service isn't always reliable. And in the winter season, there are even more problems.
No, olvídese. Está triste porque no pueden salir a trabajar. Cuando llueve, que cae así pues que llueve, con poco que llueve, y luego se hace el atascadero. Cuando llueve harto, que ya corre mucha agua, así, se hacen barrancos, se hacen hoyos, y no pueden salir para ninguna parte a trabajar.
Despite the challenges of living here, Doña Carmen and Don Alejandro try to remain optimistic that the conditions will one day get better.
Yo pienso que ya estando habiendo drenaje, empavimentando la calle, la avenida y aquí en nosotros también, ¿verdad? Poner algo también aquí en nuestras calles, cambiaría la vida de nosotros aquí.
In the meantime, they carry on, consumed by the tasks of raising families and entirely disconnected from their impact on the Tijuana estuary, just a few miles north.
For Oscar Romo, protecting the estuary downstream means reaching out to residents like the family you just met upstream, despite the international border that bisects the watershed. As a man of two countries, Romo knows this canyon well. He first set foot here as a United Nations diplomat 30 years ago, when Los Laureles was pristine. But over time, that changed.
Slowly but surely, the canyon was becoming a focal point for migrants. And as my job at the UNESCO was to document the migrants, I was drawn to see what was going on there, finding out that many people from different countries around the world were being attracted to that place.
After leaving UNESCO, Romo worked his way to the job at the Tijuana Estuary and up the canyon to Colonia San Bernardo.
I was aware that there was a ranch at the very top of the canyon that was for sale. And I thought, what a great opportunity to turn that into a conservation easement. And almost all of a sudden, noticed that somebody else got their eyes on it and bought it right away and turned it into this progressive rural development, which translates to remove all the landscape, the native vegetation, put some markings and sell lots.
The year was 2004. Erratic building on the canyon hillside set the stage for the calamity that would follow.
Almost overnight, all the topsoil disappeared. These little shacks started to be built. And I was shocked. And I just knew, because from my times as a researcher, we documented the canyon as a vulnerable area for floods. So I knew that something was going to happen, and that storm happened on January 4th, 2005. I rushed in the early hours of that day, and it was horrific. Houses were collapsing, people were scared, The roads were impassable. The length of the canyon is actually very short. From San Bernardo to the estuary, it's only 6.5 miles. So that water rushed down. That night, the sediment basins were filled beyond capacity, and the sediment started flowing into the salt marsh. And in one single night, we lost about 20 acres.
The wrath of that storm is still evident today.
Where we are at an area called the mud flats, the sediment coming from the canyon is filling this area, is choking the channels, is creating mud flats on what used to be healthy tidal channels. And the sediment is so fine that it almost dissolves in water and can easily invade these areas. With the sediment coming, there are physical changes. The chemistry of the soil, the chemistry of the water changes, and that creates opportunities for invasives to grow.
After the storm, Romo returned to Los Laureles to survey the damage and develop a plan to save the estuary. His work led to the region's first master plan for urban development that respected the boundaries of the watershed, attracting the attention of Keith Pozzoli.
Oscar Romo is a shining example of an engaged scholar. He's a scientist in his own right, but he's also got an uncanny skill at organizing the community and linking science to society. So I learned through Oscar of a project that he was doing in Los Laureles Canyon. And he wanted to link up with us because we were able to bring in the environmental health science component.
We are trying to ask the question, what does it mean from a human health perspective to live in a place like the Laureles Canyon? So when you're walking around and you see all this dust in the air, what is it that you're ingesting? What is it that you're breathing in? We're interested in environmental exposures to chemicals that could be potentially hazardous to your health.
Those would be PAHs, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and PCBs, and dioxins, and heavy metals. Heavy metals being, for instance, lead and arsenic, cadmium, chromium. So we are looking for these kinds of toxicants in soil and the water. So you drill a core sample, you bring that back, you get an extract from the soil, and you expose this extract to the cellular bioassay. And if it lights up a significant degree, you know you have cause for concern, and you can go back and do further testing. This is part of a kind of molecularization of biology that's going on that's revolutionizing, potentially, the way in which we test for toxicants.
What we're trying to do is to understand how does the built environment, the land use, building practices, and of course human activity like burning of trash and dumping contribute to the presence of these chemicals in the environment? What are the sources? What are the dynamics that lead to these type of situations?
It's kind of interesting to think about tires as a metaphor for this whole problem. So you can think of tires being produced here in Mexico, going to the U.S., being used on an American car. Ultimately, they're deemed as being worn out. They're shipped back to Mexico. Then, when they're deemed no longer usable as a tire on the Mexican side of the border, they're used for building retaining walls or other erosion prevention devices. But modern tires have a lot of heavy metals and other kind of contaminants in them. And so when you use them for erosion prevention devices, tiny particles of heavy metal get into the water, they get into the air, and so they produce lots of health problems, especially for kids who are the ones that tend to be outside running around breathing the dust that has this heavy metal in it.
Dust is a very significant problem throughout Tijuana, well documented. Dust in the winds, a lot of wind in that area, the lack of vegetation gets the dust up in the air. Without infrastructure, such as paved roads, you get a lot of disturbance of the soil and a bringing up of the dust into the atmosphere. One of the things we learned from our colleagues that are studying climate change in the region is that we're likely to see drier conditions. If there are going to be drier conditions, then we can expect more dust.
More dust and more floods. That's what climate models from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography are predicting.
When you have strong rainfall coming down over dry soil without a lot of vegetation, then there are very strong risks of flash floods and mudslides. There is this future of unstable climate, which we can already see in the data. And so one of the things that we can provide to help the people here is estimates of probabilities of various extreme events, weather extremes, not just for the past and the present, but for the near and long-term future as well.
Through Scripps, we were alerted to colleagues in Mexico working on pathogens in the soil of this community, which we were not aware of. And interestingly enough, there's a very strong relationship between global climate change scientists at SIO with colleagues working on pathogens and disease vectors at CCESE.
CCESE, the Center for Scientific Research and Education in Ensenada, about 70 miles down the coast from Tijuana. Representing CCESE to this group was Marichelle Raquelme, a microbiologist who studies coccidioides, a soil-based fungus that causes valley fever, a nasty flu-like disease that is found in hot, dry parts of the American Southwest and northern Mexico.
What we are interested is in using molecular tools to identify the presence of the fungus in the soil. So to do that, since it is not well-defined, the ecological niche of this fungus, what we first did is to use available data on epidemiology and on other sites in the U.S., in California and Arizona, to try to get the climatic data in the places where they had been patients of this disease, and then do a model using, with collaboration of another researcher here at CCESE with Alejandro Hinojosa, to identify the areas in Baja California that could potentially have also the fungus. And then that way we could narrow down the areas where to sample and then see afterwards if the fungus is there. The area where we found coccidioides is Valle de las Palmas, which is where this watershed of Los Laureles Canyon ends up. So it's all under this basin of the Tijuana River. It's an additional PCR of using as template the product of the top.
Tests from Valle de las Palmas at the top of the Tijuana River watershed were positive, indicating the soil samples did contain the fungus that causes valley fever. Raquelme's team plans to test sites downstream in Los Laureles Canyon soon. Coccidioides is transmitted through the air, not person to person, so the most common way that people get valley fever is by inhaling infected dust. And for help on charting the path of the fungus, researchers at CCESE turn to their colleagues at Scripps.
So what they're going to do is provide scenarios for the next 20, 50 years on how climate change can vary depending if we mitigate the emissions or no mitigation of the emissions. And then we'll use that data. We're actually already using some of that data to also create models for the spread of the disease of coccidioidomycosis.
Mm-hmm. Pathogens, toxicants, exposed sewage, erosion, so many problems all in one place. Oscar Romo understands why some people would be discouraged.
When you go to that canyon, when you see the conditions, first thing that passes through your mind is, this is overwhelming, this cannot be solved, nature is cruel, it's going to destroy everything.
And I need 3 foremen to be responsible for education.
But for him, it's about finding eco-friendly solutions. One such example is the construction of pervious pavers, hexagon-shaped bricks that residents, and in this case student volunteers, make by hand.
Well, basically we put the cement together by mixing gravel and the cement powder with water, and afterwards we filled them in the little molds and we try to pack them so it's stable and sustainable.
And the idea behind them is that they're something that will help prevent erosion by allowing for water to seep in slowly, so that instead of washing away all the sediment into the canyon, it helps it remain there.
Previous pavers can create topsoil by taking all this wastewater, allowing bacteria to transform it into nutrients, and then slowly but surely creating a layer of very rich soil.
Eventually, thousands of these pavers will be laid down side by side on the main roads of Colonia San Bernardo.
And the last component, but the most important one for the residents, their roads were undrivable, unpassable, and these pavers would allow them to drive safely during the rainy season. And on the dry season, they would control all this dust.
If it works here, if this whole plan, like the paving of their streets, works here, then they'll consider doing this in other areas. And like, if this idea spread, that would be the ultimate accomplishment.
Seeing students take the effort to make a trip down to Tijuana, which is no easy thing to do, and to get out there and get the hands dirty and work is a really rewarding experience for me, because it's proof that this generation is really concerned, intelligent, wanting to get out there and make the world a better place.
Just to be able to learn about another nation that's really our neighbor and shares the same watershed, ecosystem, and just the ocean with us, and to know what's going on down here. It literally is like 20 miles down the street, and you don't realize it until you're here. And the things they do affect us, and the things we do affect them. So it's about learning what we can do together, I think, to help preserve everything.
After we visited here in 2009, the residents got some good news. The governor of Baja California promised to install a sewer system in Colonia San Bernardo. But no funding yet for the pipes to connect it to the wastewater pumping station just 2 miles downstream.
The pace of change in Los Laureles Canyon is slow. But you can't throw your hands up and say, well, forget it. You got to, bit by bit, move in the right direction, find those alternatives that are worth supporting, and hopefully those can grow.
That's the agenda for Pozzoli and his colleagues, putting research to action.
Using Los Laureles Canyon as a catalyst for integrative planning that will allow for growth while preserving precious ecosystems around the world. Yet there is still much to be done. I'm Laura Castaneda.
And I'm Shannon Bradley. Thank you and good night.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.